two MLU insiders.
How is that not a valid argument?
Bringing you hard analysis of everything that happens on the field.
He's been a bigger game changer to the sport than anyone else has.
This is the John and Greg Show.
This is John Phillips here at the MLU offices for the first off-season edition of the John and Greg Show.
Yeah, we're back for the time being. How's your off-season going, John?
Yeah, it's been a lot of, not playing Frisbee, which is sad, and watching Frisbee. No, it's never good.
I don't like not Frisbee. I've been playing a lot of Frisbee.
Good. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
You balance the fact that I am just rapidly...
Safe to say I'm playing enough Frisbee for the both of us.
Yeah. But I recently accepted a coaching position for my alma mater's team, Masterman, in Philly. So that'll be fun.
What are you coaching?
Coaching Frisbee.
Oh, coaching Frisbee.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe we'll have to set up a game. I coach.
Exactly. Right. So it could be beautiful.
We'll set this up. I think your team is a little more... Your program is a little more storied than mine. We're a very young program.
We're only storied because of my senior year.
Because of you, right. Specifically, I'm sure.
Oh, no, not because of me specifically, but the people that I played with were all very good. Yeah. So, Jake goes to Carleton. Danny played for Pitt for a year. Yeah, all of those are great guys. So, so that's fun. It'll be good to get back into the scene and train some young kids who are all really, really good.
You had an interesting experience with the Little League World Series, too, didn't you?
Yeah, so that was something that was weird and unexpected and is a great story, and it's going to be ended up a really crappy Disney movie, odds are, instead of a really, really good story on, inner city sports and how difficult it is to build up.
Yeah, they'll probably turn it into some kind of crappy Disney movie.
Right. So it's a shame, but, there's one day, because I just started a new job, so I've been exhausted all the time. And, there was one day, I was taking a nap, and, there are 20 other things that I could have been thinking about. But I was laying there, and I was thinking, it was after Taney, the team housed at House in Center City, had lost. I was laying there, and I was thinking, it's still a great story, because it's not about winning.
And they
lost
to another inner city team.
Right. So it's all, as much as you dislike baseball.
I really do dislike baseball.
But it does, it spans, that's why Philadelphia kind of embraced it, is because it wasn't so much about baseball as it was about kids doing really awesome things and parents doing what they should be doing.
I watched zero of it, I'll admit that.
It's okay.
But I did, I'll have to admit that I did pay a little bit of attention on sports and cared a little bit.
Right.
But regardless of how much I hear, it's a fantastic story.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, as a writer, you root for the narrative. And when the narrative is in Philly and, from the league that you've helped coach for the last, 5-6 years, it's something cool.
Enough about that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Frisbee.
Let's do it.
I think the reason I wanted to do this show right now, John,
right,
I got this idea because, we both listen to a lot of sports talk radio.
Yes.
We all love sports. And they always do these Mount Rushmore things,
right,
where they pick a Mount Rushmore. It's a difficult criteria because it's not necessarily the four best. It's the four most important or emblematic of figures in a league or something like that.
So
it's tough to define exactly what the Mount Rushmore is, but everybody knows what you're talking about.
So I'm going to challenge myself, and you are brought into this because we're recording this and you're in this with me, but I'm going to try and name the four presidents on Mount Rushmore. Cause I honestly have not,
this is tough because right now, neither of us have a computer in front of us.
No, I could guess.
Cause I don't actually,
I'm
not going to know if you're right. I think I know. I feel like I'd have a pretty good chance at naming them, but oh no, I know them. I'm pretty sure I know them.
Okay, so
at least to within, I can get 7 of the 8 names, first and last.
Okay, so Washington is on there.
Yeah.
Lincoln.
Yes.
A. Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's the one I can't remember which Roosevelt. It's either Teddy or Franklin.
It's Teddy,
I think it's Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy's much more awesome.
And then the other one, FDR, I believe, is Thomas Jefferson?
Yeah, Jefferson would make sense.
Yeah.
So I think that's, at least we can sort of named
I them. Once heard someone say that Ben Franklin was on there, and had to remind them that he was not, in fact, a president of the United States.
The paper at Penn, the 34th Street, which is a magazine that instead of doing normal writing, they do kind of out there stuff. And we, you know, they put out a paper today that had Ben Franklin's face on Channing Tatum's body as their cover. I don't know what story that was linked to.
Very interesting.
Maybe think of it. So I think that we were right, which I'm really proud
of. We both got it right.
Because at a certain point... That.
We are smart, I guess.
At a certain point, you forget the things that you feel like you should know.
Yeah, yeah, you do.
So I'm glad that at least hung around. But you're right. I think that it's something that in sports, it's kind of
inevitable to talk about. It's a sports talk radio thing.
Right.
And I was thinking, you know, we've only, this league's only been around for 2 years, but, you know, why not give it a shot? Why not go through 2 years, who is on the Major League Ultimate Mount Rushmore?
And the thing that I like about this is that in, you know, 2 more years, we can talk about how it changes, right?
And the criteria can be a little less strict. Because right now, the criteria we discussed is a little bit... I mean, it excludes half the players, almost. At least half the players from this season. Actually, half the players total. More than that, because you have to have played both seasons is our...
Right.
That's our estimation of...
That's our main criteria.
Because you can't be an historic player if you've played one season, even if there's only 2 seasons.
Right. So
we've got a handful of players that fit that criteria, but then it's got to be, you know, we're also taking into account, I think, coaches. We decided we're going to do coaches too.
Yeah.
So we can pick from the players and coaches who've done both years, and we have not discussed who's on each other's Mount Rushmores.
No.
I'm anxious to see how close we get.
Right. Unlike a lot of, you know, the award stuff, which I think was easier when we agreed.
Yeah, and that mostly was all discussed before the show, if you right couldn't tell.
Whereas here, I have no idea. So yeah, it should be fun. So let's just get right into it. I think that that's the main criteria. Is there anything else that listeners need to hear?
No, I don't think so. And we'd love to hear your input. What's your Mount Rushmore of Major League Ultimate through 2 years using the same criteria? Players and coaches that have been in both seasons are the only ones eligible. And obviously it gets chopped down from there at who's, you know, been good in 2 seasons.
Right.
So let's get into it. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
You go ahead and start, because I have some names flying around that I'm seeing if I have to eliminate them based on various things.
Well, I think there's got to be two. There's two that are obvious for me that are very easy. Number one is Peter Pryor. I don't think you can possibly leave him. He's got both championships. There's no way you can have anybody else on there but him.
Right.
There's no way you can take him off. I think also Kevin Moldenhauer should be on there for his innovative offense and his innovative strategies and being the first guy to really, really take advantage of new rules and take a team and really build it into a program in this league over 2 seasons.
Right.
And then this is where it gets tough. Those two, I think, are pretty easy. But then you've got to pick from guys like Alan Kolick, Jeff Graham, and Josh Marquette. I think you can only get one. You can only get Marquette or Graham on there, I think.
And I think
it's tough to pick which one.
And what's kind of wild is you could honestly have three. Just going through the first time in your brain, you can have three DC guys, including Moldenhauer, and it wouldn't really be a question, which is really hard. But I think that I feel like it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, and you also got to take into account, it can't be all East Coast, because the West Coast plays in this league too. So you got to get somebody from out there into this Mount Rushmore, and they've obviously had a lot more roster turnover. And the guys who were really good last year weren't necessarily the guys who were good this year.
Right. That's what makes it really, really hard. Because I think that if, you know, Timmy Person had been here the whole season this year...
Yeah, maybe you talk about it. If Adam Simon had a year this year like he had last year, maybe you talk about him getting on there. But it's difficult.
Boucher
is a candidate, but I think he's a lower-end candidate. Because his team, they just didn't put it together this year.
You could talk about Morgan.
I really want to put Morgan in, but he was hurt for most of the first season. Right. Largely did not impact that season for that team.
Yeah.
So it's hard to get somebody from over there in the discussion.
It is. I'm trying to leaf through names.
I almost want to put Lugsden on there just because I think he would make a great... His chin would lend very well to the physical mountain.
I think that would be a different one. The four faces.
Yeah, the four faces.
That would stand out the most on a Mount Rushmore.
So I think I would go with Graham. From
Graham
Boston.
Was the first name that came to my mind.
But the problem is that Marquette's actually had more points.
Marquette has more points.
But Graham is the guy you really think of, which is why he makes it onto my. And the fourth one is the toughest because you. I mean, Alan Kolick's been so good over the last 2 years, but you really want to put a West Coast guy in there. I just can't really find one that I like, so I'm gonna say Kolick.
Man,
we don't mean to be East Coast biased, but
no, I'm trying to be
unbiased,
at least like biased it's towards just, the
it's
West.
It's very
Coast.
Difficult to find someone out west who you'd put in the over the last two seasons because you haven't had a lot of guys. That have played both seasons. There's been so much roster turnover, particularly in San Francisco and Seattle.
Right, or in Portland, a lot of those guys played 2 years, but year one, Eli Friedman doesn't make
earn it right
at all. He wouldn't even be talked about.
He was a non-factor last year.
Like, you know, a Mark Burton, just because perhaps. For 2 years
he's been very good
with two different teams. He was able to make impact.
He had an impact this year, but I wouldn't say this season he was. A top level player like he was last year. He had a nice season, but
I think his season was kind of sneaky good, though.
He started out slow
because they didn't quite need him necessarily at first.
Mark Burton's a fantastic player, and he certainly is a guy that should be talked about amongst the better players in this league. But I don't know if he's Mount Rushmore. I don't think this season was Mount Rushmore worthy for me. I don't think that puts him ahead of a guy like Kolick, who has really let the field and the rules and this league has really rocketed him into being known as the best player in the league.
Right. People are, you know, small side note, but All Too World did a really great analysis of DC's offense, and you can tip your hat to so many people involved there, right? You can, you know, Kevin does a great job of using the players that he has and the space that he has.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but at the same time, that offense wouldn't look the same, and it didn't look the same in the championship because
Allen's not there. Yeah, right. He's just so, so good. He's so dynamic.
Right. And I think he's another one that has to be on. You see, it's funny. When I think of DC, I think of Allen, and I think that Peter Pryle kind of gets forgotten about in my head just because he played for two different teams. And when I think of Boston, I think of Jeff Graham. When I think of DC, I think of Alan Kolick.
Yeah.
So it's tough, but at the same time, Pryle's the only player in the league to have two championships.
And only he has never lost a game he's played in,
right.
Which is the most impressive thing, I think.
Right. So...
I think you gotta go with Pryle. I think he's gotta be on there. He's the only one that really you can't even there shouldn't be an argument. He's the obvious one. He's the Jordan of this Mount Rushmore.
What's the argument against Graham or against Kolick?
The argument against Graham is that Marquette has more points. And the argument against Kolick is really just a numbers game. That maybe you want to get a West Coast guy in there. Or, you know, he's only got one championship, or you know, his first season was great, but his team didn't win a lot.
So or in the championship without
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he actually has
rolled.
Not competed in a championship game yet.
Right.
Which is, that's an interesting point, and I think we can discuss that a little more.
Because if that's, you know, NBA comparison, if, you know, it's game seven and LeBron is hurt and his team is still able to win... Just because Alan Kolick is not the LeBron James MLU.
We can't discount that.
Much more likable.
We can't discount that if Alan Kolick was in that game, I think they'd win by even more.
I do. I agree with that.
But at the same time, you know, if we're going to hold it against Morgan Hibbert that he was injured for most of last year, we got to take into account that Alan Kolick has missed some games. Not a ton, but he missed an important game in their playoff run last year. With a hamstring injury, and he missed the championship this year with the hand injury.
Yeah, I think that another added.
I think this gets even more difficult in a couple of years when Morgan Hibbert racks up some more D's and some more healthy seasons.
Right, and then you know, let's say they get back to the championship, and he rides out on top. You know, one of those, you know, yeah. John Elway-esque stories.
What would be interesting is if you could put half of Timmy Person's face and half of Morgan Hibbert's face. Because I think that would make a crazy, crazy player.
Right. I mean, or, you know, some of those young guys out west, give them a few more years.
Guys like Allison Hall and Topher Davis.
Topher, you know, Khalif, if he Khalif stays in Seattle.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too. But, you know, his season last year was so underwhelming. That's the thing that's tough about this. You've got guys that are in our heads right now, like Morgan Hibbert, who had incredible years this year. Borderline MVP seasons for a lot of these guys. But yet, that's one season. And you've got guys like Kolick and Graham and Marquette and Pryle, who have really just put together two seasons worth of excellent work, and for Pryle, two championships.
I think we're talking just sheerly on, you know, stats-based, you know, great offensive play. I think Graham, Marquette, and Pryle should all be on there, conceivably. All three of them have put up really, really good offensive numbers both years.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's hard. I'll add another, you know, layer to this. You know, Morgan Hibbert, in terms of growing this league, and you can say and you can say the same thing for, you know, Chris Mazur with, you know, Ultimate in New York. You know,
oh yeah,
his face.
A guy who also, if he had had a good season this year, I mean, not that he had a bad season, his team just became irrelevant really fast.
Right.
He could be talked about as on this.
Right. So I think that the easiest way to get someone out west on is if you talk about the biggest, you know, the biggest person selling this sport. Like when you think of,
and I think it's got to be somebody in Vancouver.
Yeah. Oh no, I think so too. And you know, Morgan's play this season, getting his team to a championship, plus the fact that, you know, he was on the Canadian national news. He's been on
the Canadian national team for years.
Right. So, like, his face is very well known around the league, and I think that it's he has such a positive impact on the league. The thing that I'm going to be focusing on this offseason in terms of writing is all of the side work that these teams are doing in terms of going to community centers and camps and growing the game. Because I think that's, if you talk to Will Smolinski about, you know, how at the end of the day, when DC won that championship, it's not just about, you know, this group of guys, but it's also about all the young kids that, you know, Smolinski himself helps coach, you know, all those guys, you know, Dan Cantor had a hand with the George Mason Ultimate team, you know. That's another big factor 2 years into the league, who is helping grow the sport.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you don't find on any other Mount Rushmore list in sports. Well, it's a criteria that is unique to this particular league. Although you could say the same thing about some, if you were doing this for lacrosse a little bit.
You know, but when you think about, you know, the NBA, that logo isn't of MJ, you know, jumping from the foul line. It's Jerry West.
Jerry West, a guy who was a great player in his own right, Hall of Famer, but wouldn't be on the Mount Rushmore, I don't think. Aside from being the logo.
Right. Exactly. But at a certain point, the NBA
Doesn't need enough. That anymore.
Right. And, you know,
the same with, you know, the NFL, Major League Baseball. You get to a certain point of popularity where it's not, you know, it's not about that anymore. The NHL might still be in that category, I think.
Which is sad, but...
Yeah, where they might be... Guys like Gretzky, who... I mean, Gretzky's the greatest player of all time.
Gordie Howe. I think that you could do it without...
Yeah, you could do your Mount Rushmore of the NHL without this being a criteria. But I think in some circles, some players are a little more popular in the NHL because of what they did to grow the spectrum of the NHL.
And I think that your point about how when you think of soccer globally, you know, that Mount Rushmore looks vastly different
than the American Mount Rushmore.
Right.
Yeah, the American Mount Rushmore would include Landon Donovan, of course, and guys like that, but in the global spectrum he wouldn't really amount to anything close to that.
Right. And the MLS is still at a stage where they're looking for those people who are growing
even,
the sport.
You might even put David Beckham on the MLS right. Mount Rushmore just because of what he did for the MLS and the first big contract.
Yeah.
So It's an interesting perspective that I think the top leagues don't look at it that way, but in terms of growing sports, it's something that you have to consider.
Right.
And guys like, Morgan, that could boost Morgan Hibbert. It could boost guys like Khalif and Topher in a few years who are, you know, young up-and-coming players who are really making a difference on their teams, and hopefully they'll help continue to grow the sport.
And like Peter Yu, Gagan Chatha, the youth of the West.
The youth in Vancouver is very impressive.
Yeah,
those
that's
guys
a really
are
young
fantastic
team.
Players. And they're going to be good for a while.
And that's why, you know, Morgan, you know, there's a club team has in Vancouver, and Morgan opted to join a different team because age-wise, it just, you know, Vancouver is so young right now.
He felt he needed to let them go.
Right.
Let them be their own team now.
Right. And so I think that when we have this conversation in a few years, it's going to look different because
absolutely
one of those guys is going to break out and be a real superstar for sure.
So what's yours? Mine is Moldenhauer, Pryl, Graham, and I'm going to stick with Kolek.
Graham gets it over Marquette just because for whatever reason I remember him more, and I think
it's
a lot
the
of people
ridiculous
do.
Athleticism. He's got the plays that stick in your head.
Right, whereas Marquette is just so good and so open and just does
it's more
everything
crafty.
Well. Yeah.
He's a more crafty type of player.
Right. So I give it to Graham over Marquette. After the season that Allen had, and you know, talking to a lot of the people down in DC and just watching how beloved he is and how I think really important he is to this, you know, to this league and to the growth of the league. Someone who, you know, is so good that and just does things so differently than everyone else in the field that a kid in the stands and or even me when I'm out tossing.
Oh, yeah, everybody wants to be like Allen.
I try and do what he does and I can't do it, which is what you want. Right?
Exactly. You want kids running around trying to dunk from the foul line like Jordan, even though they're like 4 foot tall
right.
and can't jump that high.
Right. And so I think that's what I give Allen it because, you know, just because of that. It's so hard to leave Moldenhauer off because I think that, you know, that first year it was really, you know, Boston just in terms of, you know, the club style, the club game that everyone had been playing, you know, before the
they were able
started,
to still dominate.
You know, like no one had figured out that this isn't the same exact game. That if you do things differently and you can have the same
it's
athleticism.
Like the NBA and the NCAA in terms of basketball and football. It's a different level, different game.
Right. Yeah, and you have to do things differently in the NBA than you do in college. It's just that simple.
Very few teams play zone in the NBA,
right?
If any at all, if ever.
Right.
Because the athleticism in the NBA trumps the zone defense.
Right.
And the ability to shoot trumps the zone defense.
Right, and so you have to game plan. You have to do something different to utilize the particular advantages of, you know, a given, you know, set of rules.
International hockey versus NHL hockey might be the best comparison for this, actually, because the ice size is different. The ice is much wider in the international game. It's much more open.
Right.
Which creates a lot less hitting and creates a different style than the NHL, where those big bruising, like the grinders really have an impact in the NHL. Not so much in the international game, where it's more about technique and speed, passing and spacing.
Right. Yeah, no, that's true. And I think that those little subtle differences in rules make a huge difference. And Kevin and Will down in D.C. were smart enough to realize that. And, you know,
they created an offense that makes their players so, so open.
There's a big biography of Vince Lombardi that I bought and have yet to read. But I think that, you know, there are just a few minds that at the start of a sports real boom, right?
Yeah.
The growth. You know, Billy Maroon at the Spinners tryout this year, you know, he referred to
the tipping point.
Right, the tipping point.
They refer to that all the time. I love when people talk about that because it's a great motivational tool. It's a great analogy for where we are.
Right, and I think that, you know, in the same way that Lombardi really helped push this game into where it is today, I think that, you know, these coaches, they have such a real opportunity to do the same thing.
Bill Walsh would be another interesting name with that. Developing the West Coast offense, really mm-hmm. hammering home the short passing game, precision passing game, moving the ball up the field quickly. And then you can even now talk about Chip Kelly a little bit, one of my favorite guys.
Right.
Big Eagles fans, both of us, I know. Love watching what he's doing with the fast tempo offenses, and just it's something that's always going to happen throughout the course of a sport.
Which is the great offense, thing about sports.
Exactly. And Kevin Moldenhauer is really the first guy you think of in the history of professional ultimate who's done that.
Right.
Who's done something innovative and dominated a league and really made a lot of teams look silly.
Yeah, and it's going to be, you know, of, you know, follow the leader type deal where now if you want to win in the league, you're going to, you know, not try and copy what DC did structurally, but I think that in terms of game planning, you're going to do something. You're going to try something different. Because, or it's going to be really obvious that you didn't put that time in.
What they do is, it's so good. I mean, their system is so well constructed, and their offense and defense are both so dominant. I mean, they just take a bunch of great athletes, put them on defense, and obviously you have guys with good frisbee minds too, but they go out there and they're just better than the guys they're guarding a lot of the times.
Right.
And they get Ds and they get blocks by being better athletes in better shape. And then on offense, they just crush you with precision, control, and just doing smart things. They take a lot of shots, but they don't take bad shots. They don't take the shots that we see. You know, the spinners took a lot of bad shots earlier this year. They took a lot of bad shots last year. They have taken... It's New York is another team that takes a lot of bad shots. Took a lot of bad deep shots this year. DC just doesn't do that. They take good, calculated throws. And I think that's... They're always so open. That's the other thing. The throws are easy because the guys are wide open.
Right.
And that's the testament to Kevin and what he's been able to do with his offense. And that's why he's on my Mount Rushmore.
So...
You've given me two so far. You've given me
right.
Graham and Kolick.
Yeah, and I'll give you the other three that I'm considering, and I don't want to leave one off, but one is going to end up getting left off. Well, I'm stuck with... I want to put Morgan on because of the reason that I said before about
I'm not gonna, the game. I think it's a good choice. It's just not on mine.
Yeah, no, and that's fine.
We quite literally have his face next to us right now.
Right.
So, we're big Hibbert fans, both of us.
Right.
And it just doesn't make my Mount Rushmore this year.
Right.
If you ask me next year, if he has a season like he did this year, he's definitely on. Because then he's the guy who symbolizes defense. Then he's the guy who symbolizes West Coast dominance, all that stuff. But this year, I think just what takes him off for me is his lack of impact on season one.
Yeah. Oh no. And that's fine. I think that there are probably six or seven names that we could really get into. And I think that your four makes sense. And I'm just stuck between Moldenhauer and Pryle because Pryle, you're right in that. How can you ignore never losing a game?
One guy I don't think you can leave off.
I think I'm going to leave him off, though.
You're gonna put Kevin in over Peter, over the only guy with two championships.
So why are the four presidents who are on...
I have no idea.
I don't... All right, well, no.
Don't know.
George Washington...
first president.
Influential, right?
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln, free the slaves.
Yeah. Teddy Roosevelt, general badass, right? when you think of...
New Deal? Was it the New Deal?
No, that was FDR.
Oh, that was the other one.
That was FDR. Right. So,
God, I don't know my presidents at all. Tom,
but
Tom would kill me. He's a history buff.
But when you think of presidents, those four, Jefferson, Washington, Lincoln, and Teddy, those are four of the first five or six or seven that you're going to think of. And for me, maybe it's just I prefer, you know, when I think of watching DC, like I think of that as Kolick's team, not Pryle's team.
Well, he doesn't get on because DC's his team. He gets on because he's the most dominant player in the league. He's the most, he's been the most consistent, and he's won every game he's played in and had an impact on that.
But was he all, was he ever the most important player on a team?
That's a good point. It's an excellent point. And I'm going to argue.
I can give you one time I think that he was.
He came down with those two, his hammer. Actually, the hammer should go to Calvinong. He should get credit for that because he came down with a hospital pass. But Peter threw that. But when he comes down with that throw in DC in the playoff game, he's the most important player on the field. And that signing was all worth it in that moment. Because who else catches that? Who else in the MLU catches it? Who else is smart enough, good enough, and clutch enough to catch that one?
Oh, no, I don't think that anyone else does. And that's why, you know, this season he was, you know, you talk about, like, what does it mean to be clutch? He came up every time that they needed him to. When I think of Peter, I think of, you know, I was on the field during the first championship at Franklin Field, and Jeff Graham had just went down, and I remember, you know, Peter Pryle's a pretty quiet guy generally in terms of, yes, you know, he's not going to be the big, loud rally guy. But after Graham went down and he had to be carted off, listening to Pryle's speech in the huddle gave me goosebumps. And he steps up when he really, really, really needs to. And so that's a time when I think that he was more important than Cricket, than Josh Marquette. Even though Marquette played a really, really good game.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic game.
But I think that it was Pryle in a big way that led him to that first championship. So all of that being said, I think that Kevin has changed the way that we're going to play the game for a while until
Kevin's
else
on mine.
Right. So Kevin goes on. What does that end up? I'm putting Morgan on instead of Peter. My problem with yours is just that, and it's not really a problem so much with your choices. It's just a problem that the West Coast isn't 5 years ahead and we don't have.
Yeah, we don't have
more
consistency. Yeah,
whereas the East Coast has been
very
pretty consistent.
Very, I would say. Almost every team has had significant roster turnover, or significant roster retention.
Right.
At least in terms of their top players.
Or well, in New York, who did not. You saw.
I think they returned about 50% of their roster, but they, on paper, improved 50%, but really. They struggled a lot this year, and the reasons for that are yet to be determined. I know we have our theories, but just maybe lack of chemistry, lack of practice time. Those guys were coming from all over the place. I don't know. Rough year for those guys.
Right.
Hopefully a better one next year. Something has to change, though. They got to do something differently.
But if anything changes, you know, it's going to be, you know, changing to try and combat what Kevin's doing down in DC.
Or replicate, perhaps.
Or replicate, sure. It's hard.
Here's the other... I'm going to make 2 points
yes.
to try to convince you to get Peter Pryle on your on your Mount Rushmore. The first one is, have you ever seen him be covered well? Has anyone ever guarded him well?
No, it's really hard to cover him.
Yeah, it's very hard to cover him. And the second one is, he is the face of free agency at this point, which is something that we don't really, really have yet.
No, but
he's the poster child for guys switching teams right now. He is the guy who was dominant on one team, goes to another team, and is just as dominant, if not more dominant, and doesn't lose any games. He doesn't lose games.
I just can't do it.
You can't do it.
I can't do it. I think that overall,
I'd take off Kolek or Graham to put on Pryle.
Oh, I wouldn't. Graham and Kolek have been locked in. The two.
Mine's reversed. Pryle and Moldenhauer, am I locked in? And then
you can talk me out of Moldenhauer.
No, for me, you can't talk me out of Moldenhauer.
Oh, I know that. You can't talk me out of Moldenhauer or Pryle.
I don't want to talk you out of it.
You know?
Oh, for Pryle instead?
Yeah.
No, I think Moldenhauer is very deserving.
I think Moldenhauer made Pryle and made Kolek, you know, who they were able to be. I just think that...
Which begs the question, should all three be on there? Is that okay? If he's responsible for making Kolek what Kolek is, or if he's responsible for making Pryle what Pryle is, shouldn't he get all the credit? No, I'm going to... I don't think so, but I'm just throwing that
out there. What it comes down to is that you may replicate what Alan Kolek does in terms of throws. And when you go to lay out, you may think of Jeff Graham, you know, his catch in the first season. And when you think of, you know, if you live out west and you go to a game, if you think of, you know, West Coast Ultimate, I think of Morgan Hibbert.
Fair enough.
And when I think of like what a professional coach is, I think of Kevin Moldenhauer. Whereas Peter Pryle, I think it's almost the same as Marquette in that he's very good always. And Pryle has had more moments than Marquette where he's come up and you say, wow.
He's come up huge.
And that play at the end of the conference championships this year.
If he wins a third championship next year, will you put him on the Mount Rushmore? How can you not?
Depends on the other seasons that everybody else has. All right.
If we take away coaches, say coaches can't be in this, who replaces? Does Pryle replace Moldenhauer?
He does. I just don't feel good about it.
You don't feel good about it?
That's too, like...
That's two DC guys and
Boston guy.
That's a good split, actually.
It's a good balance because those are the two teams that won the championships, and so it makes sense.
And then Morgan, for right? You,
yeah. I think if you take Kevin off.
If we took coaches out, I think we might have the same. But I'm not sure.
Right.
It's tough. It's a tough call.
But Kevin deserves to be on there.
I think Kevin deserves to be on there. Yes, if we're counting coaches, which we are.
I think
we discussed this before. We're counting the coaches.
He's made a bigger, he's been a bigger game changer to the sport just on the field than anyone else has.
I agree. And that's why he's on mine.
Yeah.
And he's on yours.
All right.
We're just disagreeing on Pryle, who I think is the hands down lock to be on this list. He's got two championships. Nobody else has two championships.
Year one, I think of Graham. Year two, I think of Kolek.
Think about it this way for a second. Pryle is in Boston, they lose no games and win the championship. Pryle is not in Boston, they lose five games. Actually, they lose six games. They finished the year under 500. They lost more games than they won last year.
That it was because Pryle was gone that they lost games.
How is that not a valid argument?
Because they returned almost the same offense. We've had heads and tails on before, and we've laughed about how Boston played pretty on par the entire year. But they lost.
They lost six games. Replace Pryle with Jim Foster. Is Pryle not a better option? Does Pryle not make that team better?
No, Pryle's better. And if we're looking at offensive efficiency, if we're looking at all of those things,
Pryle makes that team better. A lot better. On offense, at least.
Five wins better.
Perhaps.
No.
They lost four of those games by, I think, 1 point.
Okay, and like if you make like the baseball argument, like wins above replacement, or like the way I think about that is
Pryle
over the
course
of the season,
one more point every game, maybe probably two. He's probably good for two more points every game. Then they're going 9-1, and then we got a really nice season on our hands. We got a really nice battle in the playoffs, which we got anyway. But
I like that way of thinking. That one's been the closest argument that you've made that would make me consider putting him on.
He leaves a team and they stink. Not stink, but they're much worse. And goes to a team and they're much better.
DC wins the championship either way.
You think they win without Pryle?
Yes.
I don't think so.
I do.
I don't think they get there without him. I think he meant way too much to that team this year.
If you look, if at the end
think
of
about,
the season.
Think about what that does for the rest of the. That helps everyone down the line.
They
Pryl
had 10
helps
guys.
Lodach, helps Doi, helps Peters, helps. The next guy down the line gets so much benefit from Pryl taking the best defender.
I agree with that, but I think that there was something wrong at the core of Boston this season. I'm not.
Oh,
writing
I agree
off,
with that too. It's.
I
not,
don't think it was a one guy thing.
I don't think it was Peter Pryl leaves Boston and they're. That's it. I think there are other factors at play, but
I think there are a lot of factors.
Certainly, I think that they're a better team this year with Peter Pryl than they were without him.
Yeah, I think that,
and I think he helped DC a lot more than you're giving him credit for.
I think that with in terms of culture. I think you're right.
In terms of culture, in terms of matchups, in terms of production, this guy is a. If we did a first team all league last year, he would have been on both.
Yeah.
This guy should have been offensive player of the year in the Eastern Conference, I think. He's had two fantastic seasons and won two championships. He's the only guy with two championships.
It's. Right, and if that's the criteria, then he should be on at the end of the day. But when it comes to just who I think about when I think of this sport and this league, I just...
You're going with... You
think
Graham and,
those three.
And Kolek are much bigger locks.
Yeah, I do. Because as much as DC was able to roll Vancouver minus... Kolek and minus Pryl, by the way, for most of the second
for a
half.
A large amount of the game.
You know, in this, even though they were able to do that in the championship.
Well, their offense barely had to play in that game. Let's not take that out.
Early, no, that's definitely true.
They built an 8-point lead or something like that without their offense having to play at all.
Right, but I think that that team ends up with a worse record if you pull Allen than it does if you pull Peter.
And that's an interesting point.
And in year one, if you take Graham out for... I don't think he played every game that season.
No, he didn't. That's the thing. You took Graham out and they were still fine.
Right. But I still think that...
Because they have Pryl and Marquette to step up.
Right, but... I don't know. Maybe it's just that he was the third... Even though numbers-wise he wasn't, I thought of him as the third fiddle... In that first year.
Was he the leading scorer for them the first year? Or, no, Marquette was the leading.
Marquette was, and then...
But
then,
he had the most goals.
Right.
Pryl had the most goals of anybody, right?
Yeah.
He led two teams, I think, in goals. Did he lead DC in goals this year?
Yeah.
So he's led these teams in goals. This is not, like, the worst player on the team...
Oh, no, no, not at all.
...switches teams and has two rings. This is a guy who's the best scorer on both of these teams... Has two rings.
Maybe it's me, you know, coming from a cutter perspective where I feel like if I was that tall and that athletic, I could do what Peter does.
You're going to hold that against him, though?
No, but I'm just saying from where I'm coming from, I can never handle as well as Allen.
So you're saying you think it'd be easier to do Peter's job than it is to do Allen's job.
No, it's more that I hold, you know, 40-year-old virgin, you know, they talk about, you know, there's a line about, like...
Did not think that that reference would make it into this show.
No, but, you know, like, you put certain things on the pedestal.
You put handling on a pedestal.
Right, because I just can't do it.
And I'm kind of the opposite.
Right.
I mean, I can't do everything that Allen does as well as he does it, but... And it's incredibly impressive. He's one of my favorite players to watch. Let's not get that confused.
Of course.
But... Skying guys is something that I'm not... I don't understand that. I don't know how you do it.
Well, I don't either because I'm short, but...
Yeah. Well, we're both short. Yeah. So we both get that.
But, yeah, I'm not going to budge, and I probably deserve
Here's the other thing that I can't do. I can't win two championships in Major League Ultimate and lead my team in goals both years.
No.
That I can't do.
I could maybe sneak on, like, bribe people and get
And get on the roster. You're not leading anybody in goals, though.
No. Not at all. I was always, you know, begrudgingly on the D-line and was happy with my 1 point, 2 points a game. I was like, that's what I would find important. And that's why I feel like Morgan also...
Oh, it deserves to be very impressive because that's another thing I can't do.
Right. You know, so I think that, you know, it's about visibility. It's about who I'll remember for a long time. And that's no disrespect to Pryle because he's fantastic. It's just certain, this year, it was the year of Alan Colick. It wasn't.
It was definitely the year of Alan Colick.
So.
That is so true.
That's where I'm coming from.
And here's the way it breaks down for me in terms of Mount Rushmore-ing this.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin is the face of coaching.
Yeah.
Alan is the face of offense.
Right.
And handling. Jeff Graham is the face of dynamic, explosive, old guard cutting. Peter Pryle is the face of winning.
Yeah.
The face of championships. And I think that's a good split for mine.
No, and
we're lacking the face of defense, which should be Morgan Hibbert, but there's only four spots for now.
No, and I think that winning... I think that the reason why I'm leaving him off is that after 2 years, I'm not at the point yet where I'm saying that winning is everything. I think that's
it'll be
really
interesting to
is.
See in maybe 10, 15 years who has multiple championships. How
right.
many guys have multiple championships?
Right, because let's say Pryle, he wins one or two more with DC and then moves back to Boston after school.
Or who knows, he goes anywhere. He could go to New York, he can go to the West Coast, whatever happens.
Right. And then wins another one there, then we're talking. You know,
all right.
it's a long end game when you're talking championships.
It's going to be interesting to see if this ends up being like the NFL where, oh, two Super Bowls is a ton. Winning a Super Bowl is very, very difficult, and most guys don't get to do it twice. Or if it's like the NBA where the top guys just start collecting rings and start, like, they have a drawer full of them. Phil Jackson's got 11.
Right.
Jordan's got 6. Kobe's got 5. Shaq has 5. Actually, Shaq had 5 or 6.
I think it's 5.
I think it's 5. He's got 3 with the Lakers and 1 with Miami. So he might only have 4. That's besides the point, though.
It's
Shaq's got a lot of rings.
Right, and in that league it is easier.
The top guys are the top guys for a long time, and they just start collecting rings.
Four-time NBA champion.
Four-time
2000, NBA. 2001, 2002.
Yeah, he won the 3 in a row with the Lakers.
And then Miami
and won
in 2006.
The one with Miami, yeah.
Also 3-time
Dwayne
NBA
Wade's
Finals
got 3.
MVP.
Dwayne Wade's got 3. Because
yeah.
That one with Shaq and 2 with LeBron. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Now LeBron's got 2. Maybe... Let's see, he's in Cleveland now, so Cleveland hasn't won a championship in a really long time in anything. So let's see if he can break that streak.
I hope to never go to Cleveland.
Yeah, I'd also be okay with not going to Cleveland.
Yeah.
But good thing we don't have a franchise there. Or
yes.
Else we'd have to curb ourselves on that.
We need to go to Cleveland and clear out, over the next couple years, clear out anyone who plays Frisbee.
Just so John doesn't have to go to Cleveland.
Yeah, it'll just be blacked out there. They won't know the sport exists. Everywhere else we can grow it all you want.
Yeah.
But Cleveland, no. No, but actually, anyone who lives in Cleveland.
If you actually listen to our show.
Yeah, then who knows?
We don't hate Cleveland that much. I'm actually pulling. I can't really say I'm pulling for the Cavaliers because I'm a Bulls fan. But if the Bulls aren't in it, I wouldn't mind seeing Cleveland finally get.
I think it's a good story.
There's good, hardworking people in Cleveland, and they need to celebrate.
There's a 30 Rock episode about like one of the women that. Women. One of the guys that Tina Fey dates is like he moves to Cleveland. She's like, wow, everyone's so nice here. So who knows?
I've never actually been to Cleveland, so I really can't honestly say that much about it.
Regardless, I think that in a few years, if you know, different teams have won the championship every year and Pryle's 2,
if that stands,
still stands,
or
up,
if he's
then...
got 3 and you know, there's nobody else has that many.
And like, if he has a really, really like dominant performance in one of the championships.
You know what would be another interesting discussion for us to have, John?
Yeah.
Who, through 2 years, would we consider future Hall of Famers? That's an interesting discussion.
What I was
That'd
gonna,
be a fun one.
What I was going to say is another one that we can do is 5 years down the line or 10 years, however long we're going to do, just thinking of those young guys. Like, who do we think is going
to
really develop?
Yeah. It's tough to predict because sometimes guys... There's no telling if these guys will be in the league.
Oh, for sure. But I'm saying
a lot of these guys are in college and they get jobs somewhere and they move. Who knows? We have a team there.
But if we assume that they do, I think it's an interesting.
That's
discussion.
an interesting discussion. Yeah, I think we're running short on time now.
We are. Yeah, we're hanging around. So, let's wind down. I'm still leaving Pryle off.
I'm still keeping him on.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we've
beaten this horse to death a little bit. We've got some good discussion. We'd love to hear thoughts from the fans on what they think. Is Peter Pryle on your Mount Rushmore? Is Morgan Hibbert on your Mount Rushmore?
Did we miss anyone from the West Coast? Like, we've missed when we're listing important East Coast players.
Danny Tridiac is a good candidate.
No, I thought...
Two solid seasons.
I thought of him.
But no playoff wins. That was the other thing.
No, and like...
There's the common thread in all of the guys we talked about. Every single one of them has at least one playoff win.
Yeah. Right. It's true. I mean, winning isn't... What's the line? Like, winning isn't everything. It's the only thing, yeah. But like, winning isn't everything, but it is important in my head.
Very important.
Yeah.
Because it's... Why are we only play to win.
Right.
We play because we want to win.
That's why I don't think that even if Timmy had played this season, I don't know if he would have made it on over Morgan.
Because he didn't win at all in his first year?
Right. Like, he was really impressive. He's great, but...
Well, the DC last year didn't win very many games either. They got into the playoffs.
They were competitive.
Got into...
Portland was not competitive
last year.
Portland
was fun to watch, though. They were certainly fun to watch last year. And they knocked off the Western Conference champion in the regular season. And then proceeded to smack them every time they played them this year.
That's like, you know, the team in the NCAA tournament.
It's the trap game, right?
Yeah, like where... Well, no, not even the trap game, but like when One Shining Moment plays after, you know, the championships have won, and that's that one clip
that's
of that...
my favorite moment of the team. NCAA tournament,
it's
by the way.
It's everyone's favorite moment. But
unless
like,
Temple's involved.
For me, it's like, man, this is kind of sad because that team, they upset, and it was the best moment of everyone's life, and then they went out and played... 2 days later and got
smoked by like North Carolina or something.
Right. So I don't know.
Or you get the VCU treatment where they go all the way to the Final Four, which is awesome.
Which is awesome. Yeah. Well, all right. So I think that's it for us. We didn't have a time counter, but I think we're around an hour.
I think we're around where we're supposed to be. Yeah. This is a special edition of the John and Greg Show. We go a little over, you get a little extra content for your while you wait for the next one. Which I don't know when we're probably do one a month, right? Still.
Yeah, and I think that one of the ideas that I was bouncing around today is we have the really nice thing the next 3 months in that October we can do, you know, who scares you the most in what situation type show. We can do for Thanksgiving. We can do, you know, in the MLU, who are you most thankful for? And then, you know, our best of year end in December. So I think
some gifts for the holiday season.
Right. So, yeah.
Maybe we'll do a giveaway.
Yeah, I think that should be a good way to, you know, thank all of our fans at the end of the year.
I like thanking the fans. That's
what it's all about, yeah. Right? We'll just put, like, all of our fans on the Mount Rushmore, and that'll be it.
I'm excited for Combine season, too.
Yeah.
After December, Combine season could start up again.
Exactly, right?
Looking forward to doing some John and Greg Show on the road, doing some reports from Combines, coming back, talking about who looked good, who looked bad. Who showed up?
Who didn't? Right.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that we're almost right in it, which is weird. We have a few.
It just ended, and I feel like we're
almost just in it again.
Almost. Yeah.
So I'm
about
excited.
3 months away from the start of camps and preseason workouts and things like that. So.
And until you wait, thankfully the NFL starts back up tonight.
The NFL. So, love me some NFL. Although I'll probably this will go out on Friday. So,
well, and I hope that you all enjoyed Seahawks Packers last night.
I need the Seahawks defense to play well from a fantasy league.
Well, go Hawks. Then that gives me a rooting interest tonight.
Oh, you're rooting for the Packers.
For the Packers.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, don't love the Packers. Really love what the Seahawks are doing.
No, Seahawks great.
Appreciate Russell Wilson. He was texting one of our scouts on the West Coast about how he would, if he came to Philly, he would win us championships before he got drafted. Then Seattle went and
what is this?
And messed it all up.
You know someone who's spoken to Russell Wilson?
No, this is like on Bleacher Report.
One of the Eagles scouts.
Yes, not like one of the MLU scouts. That'd be great.
You got to phrase that a little better.
The Eagles' whole fan base is one family.
I understand that. We were just talking about Frisbee. We're in a Frisbee context.
All right, we're getting out of this.
We,
for everyone here at the MLU offices, I'm John Phillips.
I'm Greg Fallon. Thanks for listening.